Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Welcome back to Lantern Rouge Cycling Podcast, maybe our earliest ever stream or recording of the podcast. 3:10 in the afternoon, 1510 in Benji's hours.
Wollongong World Championships was pretty early.
True. Yeah, I mean, if you count when we were in Australia or you had to cover Australia, that was a little bit different. But we have the first proper mountain stage of the Tour du Dauphiné. We had a heavy favourite to win the stage. Actually, he was at longer than I expected. I was like, really? Because, and no, there's a reason for that. Because if the breakaway wins, of course, Vingegaard can't win. But it's a 150K stage, and the organisers have designed this stage in such a way that it makes it so likely for GC to win from Porte de Savoie to Col de la Croix de Fer. And that's because of this 50K pancake flat valley to start. So what, unless, like Nielsen Paulus, he mentioned this in the Netflix doco, you know, he's 70 kgs, maybe 67 kgs, classic sky. He can get in the break on the flat, but the pure climbers struggle. So that suits Rouleurs. Then you have the Col de la Madeleine, 25k, 6% in steps, there's steeper sections, descent, valley. Then the Col du Malard, this is where coverage started in the valley before there, 18k's, 5.5%, but steeper in the first 12k's, short descent, and then they have the Col de la Croix de Fer, which is in two parts. The first part is false flat, 30 to 40kph, 4%, 3% type operation, and then it gets steep. The final ramp from Saint-Saulnin-d'Arve is 6.5k's, 8.2%. So do you agree, Benji, that the organisers designed this in such a way to make sure the GC group or someone from that group won the stage?
Yes, certainly, because also the length of the stage, the 150 kilometers, makes it so that a team like Jumbo, they only really have to control the initial section towards the first climb, and then someone will probably start pacing. Then Nathan van Hooijdonk would probably start pacing. That climb is what we expected on a stage like this. So I wasn't expecting the break to win necessarily. There's always a slight chance that it happens on the offset, but I would argue that it was pretty clear that the GC would likely be the winners today. And if we took a look at the last couple of stages, it was pretty obvious who was the strongest in the GC group last few stages. Let's see if it happens today. But let's get to the breakaway for a second. There is a breakaway that forms, and it's exactly like you say, because Cavagna, Mikkels, Perez, and Campenaerts in the first group, the majority of that are Rouleurs, riders that can do well on the flat, but have like a tiny bit of climbing capabilities. I'd say that Mikkels is probably the least climby of the bunch there, because he's like an actual sprinter, even though he is okay getting over some hills. But then we get to the other riders that try to join the breakaway, and this is where it gets interesting, my friend. The last couple of days, we've always been rather negative, but constructively negative towards Groupama, that they failed to put people in the breakaway on stages where that might be the most viable option to win the stage. And on today's stage, they put people in the breakaway, which I adore, but it's also on the stage that it's least likely to do anything.
Oh, who did they put in the break?
Thompson, they put in the break. Madouas, they put in the breakaway. Those riders were trying to get in the breakaway early on. Sepulveda tried to join Latour and Verchet for Total Energy. Tobias Bayer, Charmik. So these riders tried to get in the breakaway, but it was a weird breakaway because I swear when the broadcast started, I only saw one man left.
that's why I didn't know, because Madouas is a good name. He's the exact type guy because he's, you know, that over 65 kilos classic guy, but he top 10 the Tour de France last year if you take out Quintana's result. So he's that perfect blend. But yeah, were they there defensively to help Gaudu and Martinez? I don't know. But you're right, it's a tricky stage. Thompson's a young Kiwi climber, obviously. Him and Pithy, I've always got my eye on, hoping they do well over at FDJ. But what was I going to say? Oh, yeah. It is actually, I don't mind the coverage of the Dauphiné. I feel like we're on almost half holiday, Benji, because we're actually an hour and a half of the stage done by 3 p.m. Yeah. Go live our life.
We can ride.
Yeah, well, I mean, I didn't ride today. My legs are thrashed. I just walked up the mountain. But it actually is difficult, though, in all seriousness. I find it much more difficult to really be super critical of a team if I haven't watched break formation, because you see the break form, you say, why didn't you get in? But if you can't watch it, maybe Jumbo shut you down 10 times with five strong rouleurs and you couldn't. Yeah. So it is in the Tour de France, I can be a lot more confident and we can say, okay, they really didn't try to get in.
Yeah.
X against your name. Anyway, Campenaerts was the last man to make it. He came into this race, I think, looking to train Benji. And to be honest, he was quite impressive to hold it that long solo. But he does the Mollard climb, which was very gradual and consistent. Van Hooijdonk was put on the front for Jumbo-Visma. I don't think they cared about Campenaerts, right? Because Jumbo-Visma kept pacing before, way after Campenaerts was any stage threat. Jumbo-Visma were pacing to make the race hard with Van Hooijdonk. That's how I read it.
Yes, but I also believe that they wanted the stage anyway. So at some point, they would have started caring about Campenaerts if he was still ahead towards the end. It was just likely that Campenaerts would be caught as a side effect of what Nathan Van Hooijdonk was doing there. But you're talking about Van Hooijdonk pacing, but we didn't necessarily see the pacing happening on the first climb. While Jumbo was controlling the peloton, the breakaway technically, controlling from the peloton. Now, why was Ineos pacing on the first climb? Because I've seen shots of Ineos pacing on the first climb, on the Mollard climb, in the peloton, where they were supposedly pacing quite hard because the group was not gigantic after the Mollard climb. And yes, they've got Bernal. Yes, they've got Martinez, who both are not looking amazing. I'm happy to see where Bernal is at. It's better than what I would have expected a year and a half ago. But it's still not at the level where I say this team should now pick up the race and throw everything at it to try and make sure that the race is harder for Bernal.
Well, forget Jonas.
Yeah.
Bernal and Martinez aren't on the level of Adam Yates right now, nor O'Connor, nor Hindley. That was obvious from the previous stages and the rest of the season, particularly with Yates. Ineos, really, they're clueless. They're clueless. They are living in an era where they think it's 2015 and 2016 and they want to take control of the race and do something. But they're not doing anything, right?
It's not the same.
No, but it's not like, okay, they do, like Jumbo weren't pacing Telegraph on the Granon stage. They weren't pacing it. And all of a sudden, Benoit does a 30-second sprint lead out for Roglic at the top, over the top. That's doing something. They're just setting a hard tempo. They're not going, okay, Jumbo have no pure climbing domestique here. So if we actually, Volta's good, but last 10 guys, no. Yeah. So they're not thinking, okay, let's use our numbers and actually go crazy and Fraile will go on the descent with Bernal and we'll attack over the top. No, it's just setting a hard tempo. It's just, what are you doing? Like you're not even the second or third best in this race. So maybe they can't read a Watts graph. I probably can't, but yeah, that's what they were doing. So, Jumbo would have been happy with that because they probably would have been short on. Anyway, coverage starts, and Van Hooijdonk's pacing. The group is thinning 50 to 40 to maybe 35. No one serious has dropped off Van Hooijdonk's pacing. And then Campenaerts is pretty much reeled in maybe 10 seconds. He does get over the top of Mollard himself. And then Van Baarle goes pacing Benji on the last 3Ks.
Yeah.
And drops Van Hooijdonk. So Jumbo were clearly trying to make the race as hard as possible using every uphill section. I was like, that's surprising because you could have, why drop Van Hooijdonk 500 meters from the top?
Yeah, you could have gotten him over the top and then push harder, but maybe they thought we've got the strength anyway to do it anyway. So maybe that's the thought process they had. Van Baarle's here. And yes, Van Baarle's been dropping early in the last couple of stages, but I also believe that Jumbo has shown over the years that they're actively dropping people on purpose in one-week races and in Grand Tours as well with Cousin in multiple occasions. I think in Paris-Nice last year or Dauphiné last year where they pulled Wout van Aert. Paris-Nice last year, Wout van Aert dropped early on certain stages to make sure he was there on the valuable moments for Roglic in that race. That happens here as well. Van Baarle is dropping early on purpose in some stages. Valter's dropping early in probably yesterday, I would say that Valter dropped early on purpose.
And nah, he really sucks in positioning, yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, that's another well, explanation.
No, you're half right.
Yeah?
He was dropped, and he could have chased back on and then got dropped 5 minutes later, but he just parked it, yeah.
So that's the example that we see here where Van Baarle is suddenly, he's there. And that is because he's meant to be here. And it's okay. I'm, This sounds very philosophical.
He was meant to pace this missed climb for 20 minutes.
Anyway, Jumbo's pacing, and we all know what's going to happen, but it's like gradually, and we get towards the last portion of the stage, which the last 6 kilometers are the steepest of the Quad of Ferry. We know that. It's actually the steepest part of the climb. The first part is not super steep, so I didn't expect any action on the not-so-steep part, but I feel like there was already damage done, but the ultimate damage was done in a very short period of time.
Well, yeah, because they don't have Kuss or Kelderman here, or even Kreuzfike, who crashed out. So they don't have... Volta is performing out of his skin, but Volta can't pull for 10, 15 minutes on Crud Affair at a fast enough pace. So same with Benoit. And so the flatter, false flat section, they kept Van Baal for. He paced that at, you know, we're talking 35 kilometers an hour. Jonas moves back in the group a little bit. This is what really hurts, I think, riders like Lenny Martinez, who was great on Loport, and he's having an outstanding NeoPro season, but doing those big watts and the big ring in the lead into the climb uphill, I think it really saps the legs of some of the smaller guys. Yates seemed to be fine with it. Maybe hurt Hindley as well. And yeah, the descent, I will go back to the descent as well. Alaphilippe was following Vingegaard around. Do you notice that?
It was weird.
And Mauri did a lead out over the top of Mollard.
Yeah. Well, they tried. I feel like Van Baarle won the battle there because they tried to move forward with Van Zevenand with Alaphilippe in the wheel, but then Van Baarle overtook them just before the top and they were back in the same position they were before they made that move.
Yeah.
So I think it was battle for positioning, but Alaphilippe wasn't going to do fuck all today. So
no, well, he actually rode fully for GC. He's riding for top 10 on GC here.
Yeah, but...
He is. That's why. He was following Jonas around. I was like... He's like following overlapping wheels every corner. I was like, please. I have noticed that Benoit and Volta have really, they struggle on the descents this week.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Van Baarle is better. Jonas is better than them. Sepp is better than them.
Yeah.
And yeah, I've seen Volta and Benoit dropping the wheel a fair bit actually on the descents. Anyway, get to the climb. Benoit does a super hard lead out. It's not really shown too much, but he just does a super hard lead out for Vingegaard. And then Volta, the camera cuts away to the back for a long time, maybe like when poor Benoit, he does his whole pull and all that's shown is the damage at the back. We see Landa gone, Godu gone straight away. Anyone else of serious repute?
I think those were the most notable names at that point in the race. There's people that drop after those riders drop, but let's talk about that for a second. 5.7K to go, we see Landa and Godu drop, like you just said. They need to find something for the Tour de France because this is not the form where Godu can go to the team and Landa can go to the team and say, everybody needs to ride for me. After Paris-Nice, Godu could have said that.
He did say that.
But not after Dauphiné.
He did say that. He said it in French Discord. He wouldn't get in the elevator. Damar wouldn't get in the elevator with him. To be fair to Landa and Bahrain, they don't operate in quite a traditional hierarchical sense. Like Bilbao was already getting to go for his own race. He's at Swiss, I think. They'll still go for stages with Fred Wright anyway, because they know Landa's probably not, he's not going to win the Tour de France. But for his own result, yeah, if he wants to even top 10 the Tour de France, they are both miles off that form, top 10. And I know teams do altitude camps a little bit differently. And now I think it was a thing maybe 7 years ago, you say, they just came back from altitude, they got no legs. I think a lot of teams have proved that you can come back from altitude absolutely firing.
Yeah.
But maybe they don't train like that, I don't know. But yeah, they need to find something. Godu said, I think I read something in the French press, because my French is impeccable, obviously.
Impeccable, my friend.
It actually is not bad. I get roasted all the time. And anyway, he was saying he's not too worried. He did a lot of work beforehand. But I'm worried for him because Lenny, free Lenny. Anyway, Benoit pulls off and then camera changes and then Volta's off on his own. And what's happened is Volta has gotten super pumped. He's done the lead out. Vingegaard's on Yates' wheel and then Mike is in front of Yates. And then Mike is like, I don't need to follow you, Volta, doing 7.5 watts per kilo and let the gap go. And then Volta's looked around and then I was like, maybe he should just keep going at a decent pace and have Vingegaard attack across to him and then do like what they did in Basque Country on the Ibar stage. And that's sort of what happened, right? Vingegaard closed the gap himself, but he was attacking.
it was kind of odd because somehow, I don't know if Valter slowed or whether UAE paced a bit harder suddenly, but the gap kind of got closer after it went wider for a second. And that's when Vingegaard got past the UAE riders and got to the wheel of Valter, is how I saw it. But it could have been different in reality, but that's how I saw that situation. And then we get this moment where this speed up of Vingegaard getting to Valter's wheel, plus Valter now speeding up with Vingegaard in the wheel at the pace that he initially wanted to set, that UAE didn't want to follow, completely evaporates half of the group. Because while Maika was able to do his own tempo, he can't uphold the tempo that Valter is doing for way long. And he basically drops to the group, and we see the other GC riders, the Hindleys of the world, the Ben O'Connors of the world, Max Poole and so forth, kind of looking at each other, but getting in the wheel still of those riders. But it wasn't going to take long, because Valter had thinned this group down to 8 riders, I would say. 8-9 riders.
It may even less.
That indeed becomes less. That indeed becomes less, because I swear there were 4 riders then, and then 3 riders, which was Valter, Vingegaard, and Adam Yates. But the others were still in the wheel until someone decided to go on an adventure.
Yeah, Vingegaard just sort of attacked from the front. It got separation. Yates couldn't respond to the attack, and then they settle into a tempo. Max Poole, incredible, to be there with those guys at that point. Whereas Haig is a bit more experienced, and Haig was like, Haig's not going to try to follow Vingegaard and Yates for a second. He's going to do his own tempo because he knows, you can't follow them unless you're peak pog, maybe. So, yeah, Vingegaard goes clear, and that's pretty much, we know the stage is over. The question is, what will the gap be? I got to say, Yates held it decently. The gap quickly went to 15 seconds, and I know the timing was a little bit off, and maybe it hovered at 18 seconds when it really was 25 for a fair bit. But I feel like Yates wasn't going that much slower than Vingegaard, and frankly, if he was on the wheel, I don't know. And I think that's the difference between Yates and Poggi here. Peak Poggi doesn't get dropped straight away by Jonas there at the start of a 6K, 7K climb. And he's in the wheel, and then it's like, well, now he's getting the draft benefit at 20 kph. Is Jonas going to keep going? So that's the difference between Poggi and Yates, obviously, there. And yeah, Jonas just rides away with it and wins the stage. There's really nothing too complicated to say about it. Yates is clearly the best of the rest. He got no draft for almost the entirety of the steep section or the climb, and finished, I think, let me have a look, 41 seconds behind Vingegaard. But I want to talk about the battle for the podium and top five, because that's kind of where there were dynamics. Hindley and O'Connor sprung forth to be the best of the rest of the rest, behind Yates. And also Yates is leapfrogging O'Connor on GC virtually here. And they were sort of pulling. Hindley looked good though, Benji. He looks in good shape, actually.
Yeah. Is it odd that I would say that I expect a lot from him, knowing that he was in not this amount of form before the two Giros that he was good at? Because,
I mean, Tirreno, he was not bad on top five GC, right?
Yeah, but I swear that I'm feeling like he's the potential third rider on the podium at the Tour at the moment.
Yes, he did a very, very good TT. I would say this is a very, very good profile for him.
Mm-hmm.
It's very similar to Fadaya, not as hard, but the way it's false flat before, a hard day before, shortish stage, up to over 2,000 meters with a steep 20-minute finish, it is very, very good for him. He's performed on this before, so I wasn't surprised he performed so well, and he did. And he basically drops O'Connor eventually from that group, and O'Connor nearly gets back to his wheel. O'Connor was working with Martinez, and Martinez was on his wheel trying to get back across. But Hindley, he goes and nearly catches Yates, actually. He finished the climb very strong. 53 seconds behind Vingegaard, 12 seconds behind Yates. O'Connor was kind of in the middle, and I feel like if O'Connor sat in the Poole Hay group and did one big burst later, I think he actually gets closer to Hindley, but he was trying to get back to the wheel. And Poole and Haig, I think, was riding for top five GC. So, yeah, Hindley, and he was more marking Martinez, Martin, Menkes, and Train, and Chavez, and they were all behind him. So he was happy to just work with Poole, who's also minutes behind him. So, yeah, they ride in. Poole fifth, Haig, Martin, Train. Very good result from him. Martinez, Menkes, Rodriguez, all in that group on 110. Carlos Rodriguez dropped on 116, so the Ineos guys were kind of all over the mountain.
What did I think?
Carlos?
Yeah.
11th, I believe. Yes. Bernal, 14th. So they were sort of all over the place. He lost 127, only 17 seconds behind the Poole Hay group. Johannesson lost a lot. Carapaz, really bad, 210, a full minute behind the sort of top five guys. Alaphilippe was only 5 seconds behind him. He was going for his top 10.
Mate. Yeah. GC Jala's gone, my friend, tomorrow. Unless the descents are the ability that brings him back to the group every time.
So he's got to defend his top 10 against Martin, Menkes, Train, and Chavez. He's not got much of a gap on them either. Godu lost 3 minutes. Mas lost 250. He also needs to find something before the Tour de France. Revised GC, Vingegaard on 211 ahead of Yates. it's a big gap. O'Connor on 224, Hindley on 236, Haig moves into fifth on 304, Martinez 327, Alaphilippe 348, and then yeah, Martin Minkie's trying. So what do we learn from this, Benji?
What do we learn from this? That Max Poole's a good rider.
Yeah.
That I would say that I want to bring up a topic that might not be the obvious one, but I would say that the thing we learn from this is that if your UAE's plan is to go to the Tour de France with Pogacar and Adam Yates as a duo to battle against Vingegaard, then Adam Yates won't be in that battle. It will just be Pogacar versus Vingegaard, which is still a possible 1v1 scenario that Pogacar can win. But I don't believe in Adam Yates versus Vingegaard at any point for the Tour de France.
I don't think Pog's that much better than Yates climbing level right now.
Pog is a much better rider.
Yeah, overall, of course. But in terms of pure climbing right now, I'd be surprised if Pog was much better. He broke his arm. Like, not been able to train properly. Yates has been, yeah.
Yeah, but let's say they're both not on Vingegaard's level. There's no way they can outplay him tactically, I feel like.
I think they will. I think UAE are going to use 2 liters. I'm pretty sure of it.
Yeah, but do you think it will work? That's the thing.
No, but
it's fun though. I enjoy the thought of it.
I mean, there's other there's some medium mountain stages in week two where, like, what if Wilco is no good? What if Sepp is no good after the Giro? What if Wout can't climb at the level? What if Benoit didn't, you know, can't climb that long? I don't know. I mean, you got to try something, right? Because I don't think they're going to just burn Yates GC is what I'm saying. I don't think they will.
I don't think they will either. I agree with that. But I still believe that the only chance for them to win the Tour de France is Pogacar winning the race at the end. And I still believe that Pogacar can win the race regardless of the wrist. Doesn't matter. I don't think he's favored right now. Vingegaard is favored after this Dauphiné because Pogacar's wrist is a notable issue that he has to overcome for the Tour de France and his training has been impacted and so forth. But that doesn't change that Pogacar can win this Tour de France.
Yeah, it's not looking good. We'll see if... I mean, maybe he wins the Slovenian National Champs TT. I mean, yeah. I think, yeah.
You're really, really negative on Pogacar right now, as in his chances.
He has zero chance to win.
Okay.
If Jonas doesn't crash out.
Okay.
Which is possible, or Jonas freaks out or whatever. Like, remember Jonas panicking every medium mountain stage when Pog was trying to get in the break? Like, there's still ways for Jonas and Jumbo to fuck it up. So it's not just a watts per kilo equation on Puy de Dome. There's lots of other places and difficult moments and question marks over Jumbo's team. So, yeah. And we haven't even finished the Dauphiné yet. Anyway, regardless, Vingegaard's looking pretty good, one would say. Tomorrow's stage is actually very, very difficult. From Le Pont de Claix to La Bastille Grenoble. So they go into Grenoble and then do this like absolute walled finish. But it's a hard stage beforehand. This one starts uphill, so the break is winning tomorrow. I'm pretty sure of it. 6K's 6% start, but there's other climbing in there too. Then they do another 4K 7% climb. Then there's a up and down valley. And then the hardest climb of the stage is mm-hmm. with 50 Ks to go, 60 Ks to go. The Col du Granier, which is 10 Ks, 8.7%, not to high altitude, but that is very steep. And there's the last 2 kilometers of that average 11%. Then there's no more flat for the rest of the stage. There's 3 more climbs after that. Col du Coucheron, 7Ks, 6%. Short descent. Col de Port, 7.5Ks, 6.6%. Long descent to sea level almost. And then a 1.8K, 14% finish. So that's disgusting. That finish. If anyone wants to win GC, Benji, they got to go on Col du Granier. But
yeah, but
they can't because UAE don't. Say Pog was here, right? Yeah. Pog was here, him and Yates both on a minute or whatever they're on, 2 minutes. They're both on two Pog minutes. Attacks.
Granier, definitely.
Yeah. But, so, and you try to get someone in the break, right?
Exactly. But the issue here is, you were going to say it, but I'm going to steal it because you stole my Almeida pick in the Giro preview and I've never forgotten since then.
Well, you lost. So imagine if you won, then you'd be really pissed.
Then I'd be really pissed.
You can pick
but
it next
year. Possible for a while. I would say when it comes to this top 10, that there's just no teams with two riders that can per se go for it with Landa and Haik. Landa's just on like, Landa's in the shadow realm right now. So.
Oh, Landa's not serious right now, yeah.
He can go in the breakaway and then if it doesn't work to go in the breakaway, he'll probably ride off to the team bus in the same way that he did in that Vuelta, remember? Instead of helping out the team that Vuelta.
Oh, yeah, true.
Anyway, for the rest of the teams, you've got Hindley, Buchmann. Buchmann's in the shadow realm as well. Then we've got Alaphilippe, who solo and just wants to survive in the top 10 at this point. Tran will just try and survive for UnoX. Martin will try and survive. Mankies as well. O'Connor, not the kind of rider that will attack on Granier. He's going to play it negatively between brackets, but that's because he needs to get the best result for himself. And that's the same for many people. Hindley, yeah, he's good, but what's he going to do to win the race? They're all fighting for podium at the moment.
Who's going to pace for him?
Not Buchmann.
No, that's the thing. You know, you need, first of all, you need a special rider. Secondly, you need a very strong team.
And
thirdly, you need cojones.
And you need to be able to pace more than Jumbo because Jumbo might unironically open up the race for Vingegaard to just have some fun. Because he knows he can win the stage if the gap is close. Now, I agree that the breakaway is more likely because of the start being uphill and so forth, but I feel like it might be a similar scenario, perhaps. Like, then the Granco, no, then the, oh, come on, the Rom stage, Pogacar, where Turns win the stage and Pogacar doesn't come too far after, in the same way that someone can win the stage and Vingegaard might not be too far after because he just dropped everybody on Granier. But the problem is, you think Vingegaard will open up on Granier?
No. No.
I think it would be fun. I would love it. Pogacar would.
It's something, this is the sort of stage, if Roglic was leading by a minute and a half, this is the Roglic capitulation stage where someone starts pacing super hard on Granier. Oh, it'll be fine. And then all of a sudden he's fucking getting dropped on the second last climb. This is Paris stage 8, but this is a super hard mountain version of Paris stage 8. I really like the stage design. It's a shame the way the race has worked out that I don't think anything will happen on Granier, frankly, because if you're Ineos and Pace, first of all, Ineos guys are now really far behind, but they are the guys that have 3 guys within 3 minutes.
Yeah.
In theory, you try something there, but Jumbo won't care because AG2R will chase.
Bernal will.
Bora will chase. So many, Bahrain will chase. Every other top 10 team will chase. So that's difficult for them. But yeah, I think as well for Jumbo, Visma and Jonas, it's like 2K's 14%. You can put in loads of time there too. So
yeah,
I think break wins, but I agree. Mm-hmm. I reckon the guy who, there'll probably be 2 people solo and they'll get to the base of Bastille and then they'll be like, oh, they got a nice lead. And then suddenly the GC group start flying and they will be crawling and probably win by less than a minute maybe. So yeah, I think it's a shame Godu's so close on GC. Like he's on 7 minutes. Maybe they do let him in. I doubt it. He would be a good one to win the stage. Landa's now on 10 minutes. Who have you got, Benji?
God damn it. Why did you have to throw it at me right now? Because I'm going through the list right now to see if people lost time on purpose. And I don't necessarily see that too much. I think Quickstep will be in the break because there's no other reason to not send people in the break next to Alaphilippe. Alaphilippe and the peloton rest in the breakaway, the entire team, because why not? Except for one person, Van Zevenaar, to get water bottles for Alaphilippe and then do a lead out just before they get over the top of a hill. That makes no sense. But anyway, people that could go in breakaways. What has been going on with Onley, by the way? Because like I feel like he has been losing quite a bit of time.
Just no good.
And yeah, that's one of the things. But also like the GC riders that we mentioned that are now on a solid gap. Like Landa's on 950. The dude has to get in the breakaway. Sean Poussin, 811, needs to get in the fucking breakaway. Buchmann, 740, maybe. Sean Quinn, 11, and so forth. Juanpe, it's happening. 1246, Juanpe wins.
Juanpe's a really good one, yeah. I mean, Ciccone's on a really annoying gap. He's on 610. It's like, people aren't going to be that happy with you getting in the break if they're in the top 10 on GC, because he's only a minute and a half behind the 10th place. So UnoX won't want Ciccone or Mas in the breakaway, nor Gaudu. Champusnais and Lander and Groschartner. I wouldn't be surprised to see Groschartner in the break. So yeah, those three you mentioned, and you said Juanpe all in that zone. Pernsteiner, I think. Where did he finish?
And by the way,
I'm picking Pernsteiner to win.
Ooh, you're picking Pernsteiner. I don't.
He finished 17th on the stage.
I also believe that Van Zevenaar will be in the break, by the way. I ranted on about Quickstep earlier, but it feels like a stage where Van Zevenaar will try to win the break since he's the climbing type that can do
good
so
finish
for the
him.
Team. Yeah, but that being said, it's just written in the stars that Juanpe wins the stage. And knowing my luck, he probably DNSs before the stage even starts. But it should be, I don't know what I was going to say. It should be a good stage, but I'm not actually that sure. It might just be very similar to today.
What about GC? What GC changes are you expecting? I don't see Yates losing second position to O'Connor or Hindley, frankly.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
Vingegaard's on 211, so he has to crash to lose. Haig is not going to beat O'Connor or Hindley, I don't think, to move up. Yeah, what do you think?
I'm looking at the top 10, and I feel like we might just see people that are in the top 10 drop out of the top 10 still. I think Alaphilippe will be close to be able to get in the top 10 or not. It's going to be a close one for him. Because on the climbs, he'll be too slow. On the descents, he can get back the time that he lost on the climbs. But can he keep doing that on those three climbs? Granier, the one after that, the one after that? That's going to be a tough one in my mind. So I would expect Bernal to come closer. With Rodriguez, I don't know. I feel like he might get closer to the top 10, but I don't think he'll get into the top 10 because the two better riders on that team are clearly Bernal and Martinez, even though they're all very close to each other, to be honest. I just feel like people will get into the top 10 that aren't into the top 10 yet, but who are the victims of that? That's a very good question. Because Martin actually climbed well today.
I have a message for DSM. Tomorrow is the day where you actually should pace Granier. Poole is in 12th. The long climbs, he is a long climber.
Yeah, correct.
You need to pace Granier to put Train, Menkes, Martin, Alaphilippe, Martinez under pressure, who I believe he was better than those guys today. So they need to pace.
Do we stop just under Haig?
Haig just smarter, dude.
No. I agree that to be able to get to Haig, he already needs to do a lot. Haig looked okay today, so.
But seventh is a good result for him.
Yeah, but I still believe that Max Poole, if the race is really hard, could end up near or in the top five. In will be hard, but near is possible.
But 12th to 6th is a really good jump. And if it was for Vingegaard or someone, who cares? But he's a young rider. I think top 10 in the world in the most prestigious 1 week in some people's eyes is a good result. So they really need to make the race long and hard for Max Poole tomorrow and try put people like Menkes under pressure. And
can't believe
Philippe.
It.
What?
Can't believe it, man, that you just disrespected the Wales of Belgium tour.
Is Remco going to that or not?
No, he's doing Swiss. Swiss, right, instead? Because Phil Favre was saying that he doesn't like that Remco went for the Sporter side. To Swiss because Swiss is not paying as much as well as a Belgium tour would be paying.
Yeah, well, so I got my views on there. Remco, quick step. Will Ineos do a package deal? Ship all these guys out for Remco? Maybe not. Anyway,
talking about races.
Oh yeah.
Before you finish off the podcast, I want to mention There's been this French race in women's cycling through the Pyrenees that has been in a bit of trouble the last few days, because I swear yesterday I was looking at images and there were cars everywhere on the road. A bus in the last 1.5 kilometers, then cars coming in the opposite direction in descents today. Like, the riders actively chose to neutralize the start of today's stage as a consequence of what happened yesterday. And then they had a vote during the stage on whether the stage would even continue after motorbikes were going upwards through the peloton. So I've got a bit of a take on this, and you probably agree, but on one end, I love having as many races as possible. But on the other end, if races can't uphold the basic safety, then they shouldn't be on the calendar in the first place. And races should be held accountable way more than they currently are.
Yeah, and the women's calendar's exploded. There's so many races. There's like La Vuelta Femenina goes from 3 stages to 7, and then there's Basque and Burgos straight after. We basically have a month of Spanish. We do have a Spanish almost Grand Tour in all of May. And then there's the Scandinavian races pop up, and now they have to contract because they can't get investment. And it seemed like the calendar went from not very many races, and all of a sudden there's so many, and then is there coverage? And so it does seem to have gone from 0 to 100 very quick, which is a positive thing that there's all these races. But often the teams can't actually, like, they don't have enough riders yet to field them at these races. But that's separate to the safety issue. So yeah, I fully support the peloton taking action today.
Exactly. That's the factor that we don't often see in men's cycling as much as we see in women's cycling.
Solidarity.
In moments where it's actually about proper safety, like crashes and stuff like that, that are organizer fed. We see in this stage now, Madeleine van Geloof and Conor Ago, the La Patronas of the peloton. Is that it? You're the Spanish guy here. Come on.
Patron. Well, patron is a French word. You're the French speaker.
Is patron French? I thought it was Spanish.
Yeah, it's French. Isn't
it Spanish too?
Jefe is boss in Spanish.
It works both. I promise you.
I don't know what feminine of jefe is. Anyway, Claude Rigaud seems to be very well respected in the women's peloton. And that was good solidarity in the peloton. I will say though, Benji, it is the men's peloton would do this for a 1.1. They won't do it in the tour. And I dare say that those sort of things apply as well. They do it. They try it on the Giro every year, and the Tour de France, you never hear peep. Adam Hansen got involved. Hopefully they sort it out. That was on today. Anything else from ZLM Tour? I think Coy looks on to win that in terms of GC.
I didn't see it. Did he win?
Yeah. No. Yeah. I mean, yesterday. It's still going today. Today's stage. That's it. I think.
Oh yeah, we're early. I forgot about that.
3:50.
Crazy.
I know. I'm gonna do the highlight video. All right. Thanks to everyone for listening. As always, and we'll see you the recap of the Bastille Grenoble stage tomorrow in the Dauphiné. Till then, ciao.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.